This podcast features three supposed adults who definitely use adult language. They're also supposedly writers who are definitely not procrastinating by making this podcast. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to No Bad Ideas, the storytelling game show where we take the worst ideas from the internet and try to turn them into stories that are actually good.
My name is Gabriel Urbina, and I am your first Bad Ideas host.
My name is Sarah Shackett. I'm your second Bad Ideas host.
And my name is Zach Valenti, your third Bad Ideas host.
And welcome to Bad Ideas Thunderdome, where two bad ideas enter, then we enter, then we cry a lot because, oh God, the ideas are so bad, but we have just 10 short minutes to turn them into good stories. Zach, Sarah, how are you both doing today?
Doing all right.
I'm doing excellent. Because I have the first idea.
I was going to say, and how are we going to be doing after we hear this first idea, Sarah?
You guys can just relax. This is so chill, this idea that I have. No.
I was about to say, this sounds suspiciously like what a trap would say before it was sprung.
Trap is my middle name, but this idea that I have comes to us from our good pals at NPR, and I brought it here because it is not in and of itself necessarily bad, but I think it is the setting for some mayhem, and so I wanted to bring it to you. So, dear listeners, if you'd like to read along or see the photo, then the link to this article will be in the episode description. And it has a great title, so I'm going to read it.
All right, let's do it.
All right. So, new Hong Kong bus tour is meant to put people to sleep.
Okay.
Famously, what people want on a bus is to fall asleep.
Any new parent will confirm the soothing, somnolent effects of a car on a tired, cranky infant. That road noise works on adults, too. A Hong Kong tour company noticed patrons falling asleep on its buses and recently launched a 5-hour, 47-mile ride to nowhere. The company, Ulu Tours, hopes riders will find it a snooze fest. Quote, when we were brainstorming new tours, I saw a social media from my friend saying that he was stressed out by his work. He couldn't sleep at night. Kenneth Kong, Ulu's marketing and business manager, told the Associated Press, quote, but when he was traveling on the bus, he was able to sleep well. His post inspired us to create this tour that lets passengers just sleep on the bus. Tickets range from $13 to $51 per person, depending on the upper and lower deck seating. Riders also get a goodie bag with eye masks and earplugs. The first ride launched Saturday and sold. Some inaugural passengers even brought their own blankets and slippers. So it's very short. That's what I have for you. A ride to nowhere where people are meant to just fall asleep on a bus. I'm sure nothing bad could happen.
This is like a sequel to that idea that we had like a year ago. That was like the Australian airline
company.
Yeah,
the airline flight.
That had like a round trip flight, by which I mean like a flight that like... It was just for people that missed the sensation of flying during the pandemic. So they just got on the plane.
I was going to say, this sounds awfully familiar.
Yes.
is the grounded version.
It reminded me of that as well. It's very, very similar. But I don't remember what we did with the airplane idea. So I think we're in the clear.
Yeah, I don't either. And this is, I think, distinctly different enough.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And there's more possibilities when you're not in the sky.
So I'm going to put 10 minutes on the clock. Tell me some of these possibilities, Zach.
Well, I mean, obviously, we need to decide, do they break down in the most inconvenient place? And what would be the most inconvenient place for them to break down? I just love the idea of, like, I don't know if we need to go full Midsummer Night Dream, but just the idea of, like, they got in the bus for sleep, and it's the last thing they're going to get.
Well, or it could be that, or it could be like, you know, it would need to have like a slightly different tweak where the bus isn't just like it will take you to the same spot where you got picked up from, but it would be like oh my God, you're so stressed. Go to this wonderful resort. And it's really nice. Like, the first thing is that they get you on this nap bus. And so, like, when they're taking you to the resort, you take, like, a nice long nap. And then you get there and you feel refreshed. But then when they are on the bus, something happens. The bus gets, like, a flat. They go to a different place. And then once they get there, the people on the bus wake up and they're like, oh, I guess we're in the resort. All right. Time to act as though we're in a resort. But they're actually somewhere else. They're in a Hell's Angels convention or something. Like, you know, like the bus has kind of taken them somewhere and they're now there under false premises.
Right. Sure. And the only way out is probably the bus, which will put them all to sleep again. Which I think would be a problem in finding the correct route. And maybe it's like an automated bus, so there isn't a driver.
It's a self-driving bus.
It's a self-driving bus.
It's like a nap monorail or something.
Yeah, something like that. So that, like, I think we want to take as much, like, human control over this bus out of the equation. If we're going for, like, they just end up somewhere random and then have to problem solve.
And I think that the question is, do they have to problem solve, or do they kind of glide by not knowing that they're actually, like, in some danger? Like, I remember that movie, Game Night, a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Where some people ended up in a, like, actual kidnapping situation. But because it just so happened that they had been presented with, like, hey, a friend of ours is doing this, like, immersive escape the room type thing, they thought that all the people that were the real kidnappers with very real guns were all just very convincing actors.
Right.
So, you know, so, like, do they wake up and kind of realize, like, oh, shit, this is bad and we've ended up in a bad place?
Right.
Or do they wake up and are kind of like, ah,
this is charming.
Yeah, exactly.
I think for this, then it has to specifically be they are headed for, like, a retreat to help deal with stress, right? That, like, mm-hmm. these are people who have trouble sleeping, have trouble letting go of stress. And when they find themselves in, like, the Hell's Angels convention, they're like, oh, okay, this is part of the experience to, like, help us understand that we don't need to stress out so much.
It's exposure therapy.
Exposure therapy, basically. Right. Yeah.
Which could be, like, the name of the film.
And whoever the main characters are, like, I don't know if it's, like, a married couple or something, or, like, two brothers or whoever. Like, you know, whoever refers them to this, they're like, guys, I did this last month. It's amazing. But also, like, just know, like, it's a little unusual.
It's weird, yeah.
And part of it is that, like, they don't tell you a lot of what they're going to do to you beforehand. But, like, trust me, it's very safe.
You're,
like,
in
it's
good all, hands.
Like, super carefully mm-hmm. managed.
In good hands, also a good so, title.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really good. That's right.
Yeah.
So, you know, so, like, once you get there, like, you know, like, relax. Like, you know, like, just, like, don't even worry about it.
You've just got to be open, man. You've just got to be open
man.
And present.
That's right.
And just ready to experience it all. Now, do we want to have, like, a skeptic on this bus as well? Like, a bunch of people who are there for this purpose, and then someone who is, like, the brother or the spouse, or, you know, the child, or some sort of relation who's like, no, we are in danger, guys.
I mean, what immediately pops to mind that I'm not sure is correct is, like, an investigative journalist who's, like, knows that this thing that gets a lot of traction may have a dark side.
I actually really like that
angle.
I like
that, yeah.
Like, okay. Someone is there with, like, I don't care what they say, this is a cult, and I'm going to, like, expose it.
Yeah.
Right. And they're, like,
going in undercover.
Taking audio recordings and just, like, yeah, they're in deep.
Got it.
And I like that because that's, like, an interesting wrinkle. And so they're trying to expose something, but it's not the thing that it's not the danger that they're actually in. Like,
right,
they are
exactly.
Sort of being like, you know, like, this is just here to brainwash you. This is here to, like, you know, convince you to hand over more money. This is here to convince you to, like, buy into their, like, quadruple platinum Zeta diamond package.
Right.
When it's like, no, this is just a, like, increasingly angry biker that is about to beat you with his, like, pool cue.
Amazing. I love it. And then there's sort of a question of, like, do the people who are actually there for the stated purpose buy into it, or do they listen to this investigative journalist and sort of try and find the edges of this situation, which is the wrong situation for them to be in. So it's funny on multiple levels.
I think he eventually wins them over, but I don't think it can start out, or they, or, you know, whatever their gender ends up being. The idea of like, guys, like, this is toxic. Like, we need to fight against this. And it's like, no. Like, we deserve this. Like, we need to like learn better. Like, we signed up for this, and like, we're here to do whatever it takes. And then some point in the second act, I think they need to be bought over that it's time to rail against this sort of perverse system, not realizing that it is in fact just a straight up dangerous situation.
Right. I think it would also be funny if at first the audience doesn't know that this skeptic, that this undercover reporter, who they really are. And so there can be kind of a moment where like this person is like, guys, there's something that you need to know. And you as the audience are like, oh, thank God, somebody's figured out that they are actually in immediate danger. And then the person is like, this is all a scam for money. And you're just like, God darn it, this person has not figured anything out.
Yeah.
But I think you're right, Zach, that like there needs to be first resistance to the skepticism and then gradually being won over by it.
Right. And it is that skepticism that will allow them ultimately to escape from this situation.
Yeah.
Right.
Do they go multiple places? Are they just like dropped in a pit of Hell's Angels? Like where, what, how many stops are on this horrible stress tour that they're all on?
Oh, probably multiple. Like there's probably like, you know, they get into a conflict with the Hell's Angels, but they accidentally end out knocking out the leader of the Hell's Angels, which makes them the new leader of the Hell's Angels.
Those are the laws. That's how it works.
But, you know, but like the Hell's Angels have got like this like rumble with this other gang that night. So they have to kind of, and so they're kind of like, wow, like, yeah, I guess that helping a gang defeat another gang in would be a very therapeutic acting exercise. Sure. And so they kind of ride over, and then like that, they, I guess, win that rumble by sheer coincidence.
Not before they tear through the local zoo.
Of course.
Standoff with the lions or something.
Right. Someone is like, I don't know if you should. One of the bikers is like, I don't know if you should do that. And they're like, no, we're in good hands. Don't worry about it. This is a tame lion. This lion loves to be petted this way, I'm sure. Pet.
Program really like looks out for us with these therapy animals.
Yeah, no, it's pretty awesome. It's
a therapy animal, a therapy lion. Amazing. 30 seconds left. Do they make it to the resort? How does this ultimately end?
I mean, it has to end with like them eventually getting arrested and kind of being like, how long is this program going to last? And then finally realizing like, oh, shit, since the bus, none of it has been the program.
But we've all made friends along the way, so.
I mean, they're in the gang now.
They're in the gang now. Yeah.
So the end,
it would be funny if they end up being part of the biker gang. And that is what they do to unwind after this experience.
I'm just imagining like the ending shot being them all on the bus to prison laughing together.
Incredible. What a great last shot. That's time.
It's like it's the inverse of the last building, shot in The Graduate, baby. You know, yeah. Like instead of them like feeling worse and worse, it's like, what a great time.
Hashtag worth it. Incredible. Well done, guys. I think this would be a wild comedy. And we are going to figure out the sequel where they break out of jail, because that's obviously the next step. But the next step will be a quick break in this episode, and we'll be back with more bad ideas.
Hello there, Zach Valenti jumping into this episode with this brief reminder that we have an active Patreon page to support the production of No Bad Ideas and all the other crazy worlds we're building behind the scenes. To check that out, scope the sweet rewards we offer for monthly subscriptions, as well as how to sign up yourself. head on over to nobadideaspodcast.com/support. Once more, that's nobadideaspodcast.com/support. If you already support the show, we so appreciate that. And regardless, thank you for listening. All right, let's get back to more No Bad Ideas.
Alrighty, folks, welcome back to the back half of No Bad Ideas, where we're going to do another bad idea in just 10 minutes. Zach, Sarah, are you guys ready?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Let's go.
So we have a little bit of synchronicity here, as my idea also comes from that bastion of journalism, NPR.
Woo!
The headline for this bad idea, and there will be a link to it in the episode description if you would like to read along, dear listeners. The headline reads, Carmen Mola was a popular Spanish novelist. Three male writers made her up.
Cool.
Wow. Article reads, sometimes the truth is stranger than fiction. It certainly was in Spain last week. During an event to award the country's prestigious Planeta Literary Prize, the famed but reclusive crime novelist Carmen Mola was actually revealed to be the creation of three male writers. Antonio Mercero, Agustín Martínez, and Jorge Díaz not only created a series of highly successful novels in Mora's name, but also invented the author herself. Mola, or rather the trio behind the pseudonym, won the prize for the novel The Beast, although the author is perhaps best known for the Inspector Elena Blanco series. The award for the first prize was 1 million euros, or roughly $1.2 million.
Wow.
Mola has been called the Spanish Elena Ferrante, a reference to the pseudonymous and highly popular Italian author behind My Brilliant Friend and other novels. The publisher Penguin Random House described Mola as crime literature's boldest and most enigmatic author. But the three writers decided it was time to come clean that Mola was a fiction herself. Quote, Carmen Mola is not, like all the lies we've been telling, a university professor, Diaz said, according to a report in the Financial Times. We are three friends who one day, 4 years ago, decided to combine our talent to tell a story. Mercero, Martinez, and Diaz are TV screenwriters, the Spanish newspaper El Mundo reported. So that's the bad idea. Three men who have created one of Spain's literary female sensations of the last couple of years.
It sounds like, though, before we get going, that like the comparisons to Ferrante would lead reasonable people to suggest that like this may be a pseudonym for one, or it's that it's multiple people is what's interesting to me.
I think that it is that, and kind of that you know, a celebrated female author
sure
is the product of,
and it sounds
three
like
men, I think, maybe is part of what is
maybe the genesis idea, of attention-y. This is that the pseudonym is most well known for a series of books about a female detective, correct?
I believe so.
Yeah, there we go. No fucking shit. They made up a pseudonym. Cool.
So I'm setting the timer right now. And I think that I would look at this a lot more kindly if they had just kind of been like, oh, you know, we came up with Carlos Mola, you know, like a invented author, but that kind of like shared our qualities.
Our gender. Yeah. And I don't know enough about publishing, period, and end of sentence, particularly publishing in Spain, to know that like there was some sort of competitive advantage to them presenting their pseudonym as female versus not. I mean, Morvern Caller is a film that already exists, so we don't want to do that.
Just because I don't know how well known that is, do you want to say what the plot of Morvern Caller is?
I really like this movie. It's by Lynn Ramsey, and it is about a young woman who discovers her boyfriend has committed suicide and left a manuscript for a novel he wants to be published. Posthumously, she does take it to publishers, but under her own name.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. And the film is about what happens from there. And so I'm trying to figure out the tone of this because the reason I sort of bring up Morvern Caller is like that has this very, very dramatic and almost thrillery elements to it.
Yeah.
And I don't think we want to do that. My instinct is to go more comedic. And maybe flip it of like three female screenwriters who are having trouble getting staffed make up a male writer wild success with that.
And pitch like something that they've all been writing before.
Yes.
And immediately it is gets met traction. With resounding success.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right. Under the fake Aaron Sorkin character that they invent, suddenly they're able to get shit greenlit that they've been pitching perfect. For years.
But yeah, I think it has to stay in the realm of prose because the thing about, although there is a phenomenal Twitter thread, which I will need to find and show you both about someone who posed as a veteran and got into a TV's writer's room and was not.
Oh my God. A veteran of the armed forces?
Of the armed forces. This person pretended to be a Marine.
Yo, that's bad.
Wow.
And
that is,
which is wild. But the thing about it is, there was another veteran in the room who almost immediately realized that, like, this person did not know anything about combat.
Wow.
So,
right. Like, I feel like that's one of those, like, if you're going to tell a lie that bold, you need to, like, be able to pull it off. Like,
yeah,
you need
to
do the research.
The knowledge, but apparently not. But my point about this is that, like, if they're screenwriting, if they're trying to pose as an Aaron Sorkin figure, like, they're going to have to find an actor to do that in the room and be fed lines.
Unless we're in a global pandemic where all meetings are happening through Zoom now.
Boom!
And with video game engine
instance.
Softwares, we're like... Like,
oh, man.
So I've just been like doing a bunch of research on this like new set of technologies where you can basically like use a webcam to do motion capture animation that you needed millions of dollars of stuff to do just for like Smeagol in The Lord of the Rings.
Right.
Now you can do it on a laptop. And, you know, maybe it's not quite as good, but through the like make it look crappy filter, it's good enough. And pretty amazing.
Zach, you know what it is.
No. What is it?
They've wanted to break into writing for years, but haven't been able to do that. So they've gotten jobs in other parts of the industry.
Oh, fuck.
One of them works in camera. One of them works in sound. One of them works in
VFX. Right.
So they together have the
knowledge.
They're
all part of a writing group.
That's right.
And like have been our friends from college or you know, roommates when they first moved to LA or something
that's
like
right,
that.
That's right.
And have had this dream that they've never been able to realize.
So that rumor that William Shakespeare is, in fact, a room full of people is like brought to life in Hollywood in 2021.
Exactly.
That's right. Yeah. And like, I don't know if they need to be like staffing in a TV room. Like they could be like writing movies. Like they
sure,
and I think
sure,
that
sure.
is more solitary for longer.
That's my point about like we should stay away from TV, but I think they could be screenwriters and pretending to be a single screenwriter.
Well, I think that it would be funny. It's one of these things where it's like, how long can they keep up the lie?
Right.
I think that they get through like the first movie and it's all just like this is a fictitious person that only you know, shows up on paper. Who cares?
Right.
Like, the script went out. They bought it. Great. But then with the next one, it's like, you know, Mr. Big Shot director would want to do it, but he wants a meeting. Like, he wants to talk to
this writer. And then the third, the biggest budget ever is available, but you need to direct. Like, you're hot. We need, like, and so, like, suddenly you have one of those.
Like, the third one. I think that's the third one.
Yeah, the third one. You have the telepresence robot with, like, the iPad on wheels that's just, like, driving around the set.
Direction is more funny. I mean, screenwriters are usually on a set.
Right.
But maybe they can just like get their pal Carl to like sit there in a chair.
One of them, I take it back. Like one of them works in like VFX. One of them works in like sound, and one of them works as an agent, which I think is key to making this possible.
Yes.
Like one of them is like, you know, like they represent not Aaron Sorkin. And so they're able to kind of be like, my client will make this movie, but he has some eccentric demands. They're like, we'll do anything. And it's like, well, he wants to direct from the comfort of his own home.
Oof. And yeah, how long can they keep it up? And this is a funny one because like the stakes of realizing that like there's someone is using like the Coens have used a fake editor and it's them forever. Right. So like the stakes of this are very low. And, you know, I think it's really just like the attention that would come their way from finding this out and potentially like it change the kind of projects that people are interested in them doing would be the stakes of it.
Well, and I think that there are ways to artificially inflate the stakes. Like you could have it be sort of something that is like, we're going to get like this one fucking movie made and then we're going to unmask ourselves and it's going to be like, oh, shit. Like, you know, it's even going to be like a little attention getting a little kind of like, you know, like, oh, my God, like nobody wanted that script when they thought that three girls were writing it. But as soon as it was a boy doing it, then everybody was all over it. And then people will want to buy our next scripts. But when they're finishing up the first movie, a story comes out that a different writer wrote under a pseudonym, and for some reason, they're like banished from LA. It's a real, like, you'll never work in this town ever again. Like, you betrayed our trust. And so then they kind of look at each other and they're like, oh, fuck. Like, you know,
we can't,
we can't unmask.
So I'm not sure.
Which, again, is not usually what happens with these kinds of things. But I think that there are ways to make them think. Once they're in the con.
And then it becomes the dramatic arc of whether it's, this is probably itself a TV series at this point. It has so many moving parts. Like the ultimate trajectory is them unmasking and facing those consequences and still being okay and still being able to do work, but maybe not in the same way.
I mean, you know what the other option is?
Hmm.
Somebody hijacks their fake person.
That's a like, good one.
You know,
that's a good one.
Like all of a sudden they sort of hear like, you know, Schmarin Schmorkin just like signed a deal for a new movie. And they're like, no, he fucking didn't. Like we're Schmarin Schmorkin.
No, but like if that's the case, then one of them can't be the agent.
I was going to say.
I suppose, I guess so. Yes.
But here's how you keep them the agent. And this is where this is maybe too different of a pitch. But at some point they get approached like the. Three of them get approached by some three-letter agency being like, so you remember the moon landing? Yeah, we are the ones who faked that. We're in dire need of a director of this caliber to fake something again. And we know that we can trust you because you know that we know who you are and can let this secret out at the wrong time.
Right, the mutually assured destruction is there.
And so then like they were planning to go public to like raise their individual actual profiles, but now they're like stuck playing this character.
I love it. There's 30 seconds left on the clock. How does it end and what is it called?
I mean, it depends on which one we're doing. If they're like locked in, then eventually this becomes a long running series about them destroying the three letter agency and revealing lots of fake things from the inside.
Perfect. I like it.
Yeah. If it's, you know, sort of smaller and more contained, then I think the dramatic arc of it is like about their friendship and like can they maintain their partnership because there's three different people in here and you know they all may have different feelings about continuing to do this or pursuing their own interests and I think it ends with them going their separate ways but still being friends. I don't know what it's called
and that's time.
Goddamn.
Very nicely done, Sarah. Very nicely done, both of you. I think that that went to a very good place.
Great base idea. Jeez.
Wow.
I mean, yeah, you know, also like, dudes, what are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a little bit of that. It's like not as bad as it could be, but no, it's not great.
I think that like, you know, in like the pantheon of like bad ideas that we've had, like, you know, this does not, I think, like even scratch the top 100 worst ideas that we've had on this show. It's definitely not great. Like, you know, it's definitely not like what a terrific notion that these three dudes had. And again, I think that it feels, for lack of a better term, a little punching downy.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of a, like, you know, like, you guys had, like, all the privilege here. Like, you know, there's no need to be going into, like, a different.
Yeah, no, it's just, if you wanted to create a fake guy, like, make him a guy. You're all guy. I don't know. Well, good for them for being a prize winning fake author, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah.
Well, and good on you all for listening to this very, very silly show. We hope that you'll join us again next week when we'll be back with more bad ideas.
This has been No Bad Ideas, produced by Gabrielle Urbina, Sarah Shackett, and Zach Valenti. Many thanks to our patrons for their partnership in making this show happen. And a special shout out to our Idealist members, Jennifer Schneider, Rena Sarame, Jeffrey Felsher, and Dia. Today's episode features music by Stateshire and Jazar from freemusicarchive.org. You can support the show at nobadideaspodcast.com/support. And if you love this show, please leave a rating or review wherever you listen and share it with someone you love. Thanks.